I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Food USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at Surrey Farms. .com or virginiatraditions.com.
Welcome to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Here today in the studio with the infamous Loda Jansdotter. Did I say that right? Kind of?
Kind of.
Or the very Brooklyn way, Jansdotter. J-A-N-S-D-O-T-T-E-R. And her wonderful, generally best person, studio manager, Narissa Campbell.
Hey.
Thank you both for being in the studio. Now, I don't even remember how I first came across Lota, but I know that my girlfriend now has her whole bag collection spanning, I don't know, maybe 5 years. So I stop in the studio maybe once, twice, thrice a year, see whatever new collection you have. And we end up always talking about food.
Yes.
So much so that I think it was 2 to 3 years ago, we had you in Edible Brooklyn as our In the Kitchen With and explored your fridge and your cookbooks and your eating habits. Most recently, I traded books with you and received your Handmade Living from Chronicle, which is a completely amazing craft book. But a third of it is pretty much devoted to cooking and has a whole bunch of recipes at the end. And I just want people to get a sense of how your design and your eating habits and food influences all come together and kind of amalgamate.
Well, let's try to figure that out. I'm not sure myself.
Let's you get one word to sum up the whole thing. Well, let's talk a little bit about where you grew up.
Mm-hmm. I grew up, I'm born on this island that's located in between Finland and Sweden, right in the Baltic Sea. And it's a fairly small island. And that's, I was there until I was about 6, I think. And then I moved to Stockholm. And that's when I say I grew up. I've usually say Stockholm, Sweden, because that's where I went to school. But every summer and every holiday, you know, and breaks I had from school, I was on the island because dad was there. And then eventually uncles and my cousins and brothers, whatnot, who lived in Stockholm, moved back to the island. So most of my
What's the island called?
Åland. Åland. I failed to say that.
Yeah. A-L-A-N-D.
Åland.
Yeah, Åland. So initially being born and raised on the island and then moving to Stockholm, what was the biggest difference you saw in food in general?
Well, on Åland, you have an influence from Finnish food. I think it's most noticeable for me on the Christmas table because it's culturally comes forth. We have much more casseroles on Åland, which I think feels very much more Finnish and sort of like Russian, that part of the world, and the pickle herring stuff we both have, but it's mostly those casseroles that comes to mind: turnip casserole, carrot casserole, potato casserole, like all kinds of casseroles. So that's the biggest.
Excellent. We're definitely going to get back to casserole, as there is one with potato and anchovies in the book.
Oh yeah.
Called Jansson Temptation.
Jansson's Temptation.
And I want to figure out who Jansson is and why he's so tempted.
I wish I had a really brilliant answer for you.
I'll let you think about that and we'll come back. But I also want to explore Narissa's background. In one line, Australian singer. comes to New York, who works for Scandinavian designer.
I know, yeah? It's brilliant.
Yeah. But you grew up in Australia.
I did.
Whereabouts?
I'm from Perth in Western Australia. So, you know, the people always smiling, the sun's always shining. We're by the beach. There's a lot of seafood and chips.
Yeah. Why are you here chips. Then? That sounds kind of idyllic.
Yeah. It is, but it's so far away from everything. It's officially the most isolated capital city in the world, and it really feels like it. So it's great to go home and be amongst that isolation, but as a musician, you know, you kind of outgrow it a little bit.
Yeah. So do you miss your cuisine, or do you find any of it here in Brooklyn? I know there's like Five Leaves over in Greenpoint. I believe it is Australian.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I've never been there. Well, I'll have to go.
There you go.
I don't miss it so much. There are like specific things that I can get in New York. Like I miss fish and chips, and I have not found a really good fish and chips place here yet. So if anyone knows, please let me know. And then I also sometimes really miss meat pies and sausage rolls. So I taught myself how to make those.
I've seen a couple like things pop up like Tuck Shop and... But they're not quite there for you.
Not quite.
Yeah.
But she makes them. She makes really good ones. I've had them. She brings them to work. So
So aside from learning about Lota's design and Narissa keeping it all together, the food that's in the studio, or that must come through the studio, or the food talk must like take precedence at some times.
It does. We talk about food.
A lot. We like food, yeah. Well, it is that culinary exchanges that, you know, she talks about her. We talk a lot about where we're from and how we relate to each other or not, our cultural, you know, when we grew up as kids. And we have a lot of fun at work, actually, talking a lot. And food comes up often. Mm-hmm. And since Narissa... She also writes about food and her food heritage on a blog.
Which is Bessie Pearl's Ledger.
It is.
Yes. Named after your grandmother?
My great-grandmother, actually. Yeah. She's from the goldfields in Western Australia. I inherited a book of her recipes. Well, they're not really recipes. They're just ingredients, handwritten in pencil. So this book is falling apart. The pages are... you know, ripping, and it's yellow, and it'll say cornies, and it'll just have a list of ingredients, nothing about how to bake them or anything. So I've been exploring what these things are because I have no idea. So that's been really interesting and fun.
Hopefully sharing a meat pie recipe in the near future.
Yes.
The chutney was amazing. Really, really good.
So, what I found such a great parallel was that in the book, you describe your design, your Scandinavian style, as simple, functional, unpretentious. Do you think the food that, you know, you grew up eating or around is quite equivalent to, you know, those descriptors?
Yeah, I guess there's, well, I don't know, like boiled potatoes and meatballs and sauce. I mean, that's kind of what I think of when I think of Swedish childhood food. And it's not until recently, when I was a kid, we didn't have a lot of nice vegetables and special things and exotic fruits, whatnot. That has come now in the last 10 years. So I would say it was pretty bare bones and simple. And
but then you smoke your own salmon.
See, that's... And then you pickle
and
things.
And you pickle the herring.
We pickle things. So that's where I was like, okay. So there is some steps there that are not completely... You know, it takes a little bit of science or a little bit
of... So tasty.
Yeah.
Because in the book, you actually have a gravlax recipe.
Yeah. But that is incredibly easy to make. Yeah. It's just you have to get the proportion right to the fish. But otherwise than that, it's super simple to make.
Yeah.
But I kind of made this thing. My dad is a fisherman, and I learned this from him, how to do it. I watched him every Christmas making this thing. So kind of to keep up the tradition, I call him every Christmas to ask him for the recipe. And he's like, but you know this already. But, he loves it.
I wish we could have had you call him right now on air just so to recite. But, I mean, what is, you must have this memorized, unless you keep on forgetting every year.
Well, it's equal amount of sugar to salt.
Yeah.
And you just combine those. And then you have lots and lots of dill. That's basically it. And then I don't remember exactly the ratio to the kilo of the fish.
Yeah.
I do forget those things.
Yeah.
I have it written up, of course, but I do forget. But I'd like to call Dad and sort of ask him for advice. Awesome. You know, he likes it. He likes to be.
And the meatballs.
Meatballs, grandma comes to mind, my mom's mom. She's definitely the one that set the standard in my family. I improvise on that a little bit here and there, but, you know, not a lot of garlic. It's very just, what do you call that? Allspice we put in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And egg, really good breadcrumbs. I have a problem finding bare bones breadcrumbs in my neighborhood. but a little bit of cream. It's good.
How close are IKEA's meatballs to out of your childhood?
Not at all.
Yeah.
I call them like cardboard balls. But they do hit in a rush. They do hit the spot.
Yeah.
I was just there not to
But it's funny. Like, IKEA has done a disservice in the sense that people think that is Swedish food.
Yeah.
And there's so much more to explore that's lighter and brighter and, you know, well made.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that people actually start researching this a little bit more and bring it to the States.
Yeah.
Because I noticed in kind of the index of the back of the book that you did give a couple places of where to buy foods of Sweden. Northerner.com, Swedenbest.com, IKEA for a couple things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. They're not like anything general or big out there. They're small specialty places, like probably someone who derived from Sweden at some point, or they have a, you know, grandfather's father or something that came from there. So, I don't. Is there anything here in New York? Because I don't even know. I get that question a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's more Nordic. Nordic Deli out in Bay Ridge. And then a good strip of Bay Ridge used to be called Little Norway. But Swedish specific, there's Leske. And it's the only place. It's a bakery out in Bay Ridge.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
I sort of do cafeteria style. And I found a couple of things here and there. I found some really wonderful Finnish rye breads at Union Market.
Yeah.
And then I find the lingonberries in some other market. And then I find some herring that kind of reminds me of the one at home. So I sort of do this cafeteria style of finding my supplies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what is the biggest difference between Swedish and Finnish food?
Well, I don't know. I can't speak so much for Finland, actually, because I haven't... even though I'm a Finnish citizen, I haven't been there very often.
I hope that doesn't get you in trouble passport-wise by saying you haven't been there in a while.
It definitely shouldn't.
Yeah.
Well, no. The biggest differences? At this point, I wonder if you know, immigration has influenced. Originally, I don't know if we go back 100 years, it probably looked very, very similar, except for the casseroles, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know where that diverted. But I think now Swedish food and how people are cooking in Swedish is influenced by immigration. You know, we have a bigger immigration in Sweden than they do in Finland. They don't allow as many people in every year legally, so I think that will affect cuisine.
Yeah, the ebb and flow.
Traditionally, I don't know, actually.
I mean, it's just not to knock any Finnish people, because I don't know it that well either, but from what I've seen of Swedish food, it's a lot more simple.
Mm-hmm. There's pierogskis, like that kind of stuff, and we don't have that in Sweden.
Yeah, and it's a lot brighter and fresher, and uses of pickling and
a lot of sausages in Finland.
I'm gonna get so many angry emails from the Finnish. It's gonna be fine.
deer meat, but that's in northern Sweden too. Yeah. So
interesting. It's amazing that we've talked about food and not about design at all, because inherently you are a designer.
It's all right. This is a food job. Yeah.
But your design is very much influenced by food. You say in your book that you started by even potato printmaking and simple sewing. What exactly is potato printmaking?
Well, I would say when I first started as a designer, it wasn't really inspired by food, if I'm going to correct that a little bit. In the last few years, it's become more and more obvious that what I do is inspire other people how to be creative. And when we talk about printing on fabrics, one of the very, very simple ways of printing on fabric is printing with potatoes.
Yeah.
And I just want people to get started on something and just start creating. So the potato printing is something that you probably most likely have done as a kid, and I just want to show people that this is actually something you can do in a nice way. It doesn't have to look slobby and childlike and crazy. It can be really, really nice looking.
So I mean, it's kind of what led you to stenciling later on.
Yes and no. They kind of go hand in hand. It was just exploring printing in general. But I was just at the store the other day with August, my four-year-old, and I wanted to print with peppers with him because peppers, you know, they have a really good shape.
Yeah.
So when you cut them cross-section, they just have this innate flower pattern kind of.
Yeah.
So, and I wanted to explore that with him, but I bought the peppers, but I lost them. So I don't know if I actually brought them with me or not, so I never got to do it. But it's on the list of things to do. And he was really into it. He was really excited. So he was very sad when we didn't have the peppers. But yeah, you can. It's great. You can really do really nice things with all kinds of vegetables.
Yeah.
The cabbage.
Mm.
Print with cabbage halves.
Marissa, how much printed vegetable matter do you have at the office that you end up either sweeping up or taking home?
It depends if there's a class going on. If there's a class, there's rather a lot of potatoes left over.
Oh, so you actually do workshops and classes at, you know,
in the studio.
In the studio,
which is super fun to see how everyone carves their vegetables.
Yeah, different approach.
And I always want to keep them because I think that's a really interesting thing about potato printing and vegetable printing is that you can't keep this thing, like it's going to rot.
Yeah.
So you might have made this beautiful design and it's just sort of there for that moment and then it's sort of like, you know, digested or something, you know, it's gone and you've just got this artwork that lives for that moment.
That's kind of cool, just having that temporal nature of design with everything.
We're
so
teaching
easily.
People to live in the moment.
Well, I mean, really. It also shows in design that there is whimsy and that there is, you know, this energy and movement to it.
Playfulness, you know, if anything, you know, I'm a control freak in so many things of what I do and what my finished results should be like, and I'm very, very particular about the end result. But through that, we talk so much about process and that, you know, work and life and what you do and making art should be fun. It should be fun. And not so many people take it so seriously and they sort of get frozen up and scared, even just printing around potato print. Like, what am I supposed to do? It gets too analyzed and people sort of get stuck in there. We try to sort of say, hey, just play with it. Have fun with it.
Yeah, and bring it back to its core, to this naturalism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by using something as simple as a potato.
Yeah.
But we're going to take a quick little fika. Am I saying that correctly?
Fika.
Fika, and then come back and talk about what fika is. But in the meantime, during the break, we're going to hear a little bit of Narissa's music from her website, crookedmouthmusic.com. We'll be right back.
On our back on a Tuesday night, I'll take bourbon and coke and we'll go smoking ourselves into a haze. These bars, bars, bars that I'm living
is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to The Main Course Sundays at 12 p.m. with hosts Patrick Martins and Katie Kiefer. They examine issues from the interconnected worlds of agriculture, cuisine, and sustainability. They sit down with key players in the chain from producer to consumer, farmers, distributors, chefs, activists, and journalists. The Main Course explores every important component of the eating experience: how the farmers raise their product, the distribution channels that move the product, how the chefs prepare it, and how ethics and policy affect everyone involved. Again, that's The Main Course, Sundays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
And we're back to the food scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. You were just listening to Narissa Campbell's. What was the name of that song?
That song's called Bars.
On CrookedMouthMusic.com, correct. And she was saying it's kind of a rainy day music album, but I think it's a sunshiny cocktail on a beach thing too.
Excellent. I would be happy if anyone wanted to listen to it anytime.
Yeah, we're not limiting it to those two weather conditions. No. Anytime.
Exactly. Anytime.
Fika, correct?
Fika.
Damn it.
Yeah, Fika. I feel like that means something different.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure.
Am I cursing without knowing
it? Nah.
In some language, I bet you are.
So, what exactly is it? It's a coffee break.
Fika is almost like it's an institution. It's very important in Sweden. And it's not something that you spell out. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
In the morning, you can have it. After lunch, you can go and have a fika, or you meet your friends after work, have a fika, or together with if you have your kids, you're going out to have a fika, meaning a coffee break.
Yeah.
And we do drink a lot of coffee in Sweden, but it could also mean having a soda or a sandwich, or, you know, usually have something with it. But coffee is it's part of it.
Yeah. So do you fika a lot at the office?
We try to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're a little conflicted, actually, because sometimes when I go to Sweden, yeah, I drink a lot of coffee. I can't help it. And then in our office, we have a new great pie place. We didn't used to have anything around our neighborhood.
Because you're in the Gowanus.
We were thinking we would start a coffee shop.
Actually. Yeah.
We have looked into that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there was nothing. And we're like, oh my gosh, we would do bank. And it would be so nice to sort of have a coffee shop and sort of do the lifestyle thing.
Yeah.
Just sort of do what the book is in a way.
Yeah.
Just serve coffee and have people come in and do workshops and then buy stuff, whatnot. But anyway. So fika, do we fika?
I guess we don't fika as much as we should. I think about fika a lot.
Yeah, it comes up. But yeah.
But yeah, the pie place down the road is so dangerous.
Yeah.
What, and they have good coffee there.
You are down the road from 4 and 20.
4 and Blackburn. 20 black.
That is dangerous.
So, yeah. So every now and then we're like, okay, it's time for fika. Let's do it. Yeah.
That's a wonderful excuse to go eat pie. You also introduced me to the Swedish church in Midtown.
Oh, yeah.
Now, is that a fika kind of place?
Definitely. And people pop in. It's so nice there because you have, they're in this bustling area. It's Broadway in 48th or 47th, I don't remember.
Yeah, it's in Midtown. Midtown's just kind of a, you know, vortex to me sometimes.
Yeah, and it's full of life, full of people, full of craziness. And you walk in through this door and it's so peaceful and quiet in there. And it's an interesting building because the church is in three floors. So when you first walk in, you walk into this library. And then in the back of the library, there's where you can buy coffee and Swedish sweets and sandwiches, anchovy sandwiches with eggs, which is just amazing. And you read papers and there's like rustling papers and calm talking and a lot of dunking of cinnamon buns and coffee.
That's what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. Cinnamon buns. Mm-hmm. You sent me for, and it changed my life. I mean, I stop every once in a while when I wander on that street, wherever it is in Midtown at the Swedish church. But I mean, it is traditional of Sweden. And what makes them different than the cinnamon buns you see here in the States?
We don't have, and at IKEA too, they have the like sugar coating glazing thing.
Yeah.
I don't get that. No. I don't understand.
There's little pearled sugar or something.
We have pearled sugar and it's much more cinnamon and they're a little bit hardier and they're not as fluffy. And we have cardamom in them.
Yeah.
I don't know that. You have that.
I don't think so. So, no. So many differences. In other words, it's nothing like a cinnamon roll here.
No.
But maybe they should call it something else so people don't get confused.
Well, what's it called in Swedish?
You should call it something else in America. Yeah. We have the cinnamon buns. I don't know. Yeah. What were you asking?
What's it called in Swedish?
Kanelbulle.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to order it like that.
Kanelbulle.
Kanelbulle. No. Not too shabby. Go and stop by the Swedish church. It's open to the public, right?
Definitely. I don't know. There are specific hours. I don't think they open that early. But so check before you go. They do have a website. But it's definitely open for the public.
So I wanted to get back to this casserole. Yeah. I can't stop thinking it. Jansen's Temptation.
Jansen's Temptation. I don't know why it's called that. All I know is that my dad's name is Jansson. And we're joking about that all the time, of course. Because he's the one who makes the casserole as well. So it's his temptation. But, you know, culturally, why is it called the... I don't know.
And it's just potato and anchovy.
So you cut the potatoes in strips sort of like the same way you would do French fries.
Yeah.
And then you have chopped onion that you've been pan frying in butter first. And then you have anchovies. So you layer the potatoes with your onions and then anchovies. And then you pour... you're supposed to pour cream, but I do half and half.
Yeah.
And then lots of butter and then fresh breadcrumbs on top. And it's really, really good for your Christmas table, but it's also delicious. We have something called vikning, which is a meal that you have specifically late at night, usually most like after a lot of drinking. So sort of, you know, when you get like you had dinner, you've done a bunch of drinking, and then you're getting a little hungry again. It's time for a vikning.
So. How do you spell that?
Vikning. V-I-C-K-N-I-N-J. Vikning, kind of, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to probably vikning tonight.
I wonder if that comes something from the Vikings.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It feels like a very Viking thing. But there was one other recipe that I really wanted to touch on because it feels like a misnomer for most Americans to read about Sunday pancakes, which is more rice pudding than it is actual pancake.
So that pancake recipe, that's a very specific and as far as I know, recipe just for Åland. It's using leftovers from rice porridge, basically, and then making it into a pan pancake.
Yeah.
It's called pancake. It really doesn't really feel like a pancake.
Yeah.
But and lots of cardamom in it. And basically, you're just using your leftovers and not getting rid of anything, and you make it into something sweeter and nicer the next day.
Yeah.
And usually you can eat it with raspberry jam or this puree sort of thing that you made out of prunes.
Yeah.
Which is like the old-fashioned way of making it. And that's how my dad's mom used to make it, and that's what I remember.
It sounds more like a dessert than it does a breakfast, though.
It is more of a dessert thing. And and traditionally...
I think most breakfasts these days, yeah.
The good ones.
Yeah.
They ate it for lunch, like the old farmer. They ate it actually just as lunch food because it's very heavy. They had it as lunch food as well. And somehow our wedding, which we had on the island, me and my husband, another tradition is to have a little piece of that with a shot of vodka, and that's how you greeted your guests before the ceremony. Before dinner, you had a shot of that. You sort of did some groundwork in your belly, so you know, to set you off on the right note.
Drinking glog, is it schnapps as well?
Snaps. We do a lot of snapsing.
Yeah.
We'll find any excuse to do so. We have a lot of holidays once again, and we drink snaps at Midsummer's Eve for Christmas, and we also have the crayfish party in August.
Ooh, when is that?
August is the season for doing that. And we Swedes love to sing. And drinking songs is very, very big. So any excuse to sort of sing a song, because that means you can have another snaps.
Do you have Narissa often serenading you after a couple snaps?
No.
Maybe you haven't given me enough snaps.
Well, I may have just gotten you drunk tonight, and you may be vikning because of that. So you're welcome.
I think there's harder things in life than schnapps and snaps and vikning.
Yeah. So we're talking about Sweden, we're talking a little bit about Australia, but then there are two other locations, one in this country and one in this world, that really influenced your design. Japan.
Oh, yeah.
And travels throughout your life, and San Fran, which you lived for many years.
Right.
Do those still affect your design and food habits?
I think Japan is still very prominent. I still work with Japan with my design work, and I have some licensing work that I do with them, and which means that I create patterns and motifs, and then I might be working with some designers there to format it and suggest colors, whatnot, and together we work, we develop a collection. And they can suggest some really interesting things sometimes that I would have not thought of, which is great. It's really fun, and they have a very different aesthetic. So definitely, I think Japan influences me in so many ways. Going there to eat, that truly is like eating artwork.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's beautifully presented. The sense of detail is amazing. And anything they serve it on, the platters, it's a feast. It's the feast for the eyes. And I can't take enough pictures usually when I'm there. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And San Francisco, I feel when I lived in San Francisco, which much more mellow, which I feel like such a San Francisco word. I don't even use that when I'm here. My designs were a little bit calmer and sweeter and sunnier, and now they're getting a little bit more, I think, bolder and stronger in color and a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah. So the metropolis has changed you.
I think so. A little bit.
Yeah. That's fascinating. once again, just go to isitjohnsdotter.com, JANSDOTTER.com. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Check out all of Lotte's work because we're going to keep on going on food here. We're not even going to talk about design, it seems. Your kitchenwares and your tools, the collections therewith. How much do you have in the kitchen, in the studio, and what are some of your favorites? Because, I mean, you care about patterns on plates and napkins. And
of course, yeah. I care a lot about tools and kitchen supplies. And if we had more space, I would have more things. I have very strong visions of shelves full of plates and vessels and bowls. I also do ceramic design, and I love throwing, and I like hand building. And this is really what feeds my soul, is these things. I like pretty items, and I like that they're functional and I can eat pretty meals out of them. So I have a lot of that I collected. We have a little kitchenette, or what do you call it, pantry, whatnot, in the studio. And there's some really nice mugs there from Sweden and from flea markets and from wherever I go, Japan. So very important.
Excellent. Have you ever outfitted a restaurant?
No, I'd be happy to do that, though. Anytime.
Okay. We'll talk in a couple years. Yeah.
Anytime.
All right. I call dibs if anyone's listening. Lotte's going to help us out. Yeah. All this food, all this wares, let's talk a tiny bit about design. How many food-influenced or very organic shapes are you using? I mean, are you using, like, fruit as symbols? Are you using flowers or...
Flowers. Yeah. Mostly it's been flowers and plants, and I'm inspired by nature that way. I've done a strawberry design, and quite recently I did a lemon.
Yeah.
There was a plum.
And a plum showed up.
Yeah. And a little plum. Oh, the pear. It turned into a pear.
You know, it was more a plum that became a pear. It was very cute. I have to say, I had a studio visit from this couple. They lived here in America for a good over 10 years, but they had two daughters with them. They're from Japan. And we were just looking at different work of mine, and they were really interested in my lemon design and the plum design. And it turned out that the two girls were actually called Lemon Leaf and Pear Leaf. And I'm just working on making these designs. It was kind of one of those things where I'm like, wow, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was very cute.
Awesome.
yeah, where do you think of
craziness? There are so many things about your aesthetic, about the way you go about, you know, living life and eating, that are, like you said before, very in the moment. What is the next moment? Where does Lotte go as far as design and food next?
Well, what's on my mind quite a lot right now is this upcoming summer, which is a really big deal for me because I'm turning 40, and we're going to have a big celebration at home on Åland together with my family. And we're going to, on this beautiful piece of land that we have, a very small plot, but we're going to build a big, big picnic table. We're not going to be able to build a house, but we're going to build the table. And I want to have a really nice feast, and just sort of everyone will help out, build this table. I have some really handy brothers, skilled. Everyone can make things in Scandinavia in one way or another. And this table is going to come about, and I hope that it will seat about 14, 16 people, and it will be a permanent table sitting on the cliffs by the water. And I will serve a feast there. And I'm not quite sure what it's going to be yet.
Yeah.
Some sort of picnic format, because I'm not going to have a house or a kitchen or anything like that. So.
But you're going to have a table.
We're going to have a table. It's going to be set nicely.
Yeah.
It's going to have nice bowls and good food and good people and music. So.
Yeah. And I guess first comes the table, then comes the house. But a table sometimes feels enough like a residence or place to be that... You don't always need that roof over your head.
Yeah, I kind of quite like this. I'm really happy about how it's coming about and the gathering.
And you said your father's a fisherman and does his gravlax, and you call him for recipes all the time. Who else is pitching in as far as cooking goes?
My uncle picked up, he's making this special bread. This is also a very Åland specialty. I can't find it anywhere else in Scandinavia. It's called hemvete, and it's a special kind of bread. It's almost like a pizza. It doesn't taste like a pizza, but it looks like a pizza bread, and you use these long, long wooden ladles to push it into the oven. And he's really, really, he's perfected that recipe, and he's really good at making them. So he usually brings that to any sort of wedding or gathering or birthday.
Yeah.
He's very generous that way. So he will most likely pitch in with that. And then we have some smoked fish. We have fisher. My brothers also are hunters, and they... my nephew shot his first deer when he was 9, I think. So we have a lot of venison and that we can tap into. There are a lot of freezers all over the island that are filled with venison. Because you have a lot of meat and you have to find somewhere to place it. Yeah. So they call up their friends. They're like, hey, can I store it in your freezer?
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I can just picture it now, how serene an environment that will be. But if you ever find yourself in Åland and you need a table by the cliff looking over the ocean, ask for Lotta. She may not be able to house you, but at least she'll be able to feed you. So I wish everybody a good feka and vikning. And thank you again, Narissa and Lotta, for being on the show.
Oh, it was a pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, check out jansdotter.com for her actual design implements. And I hope you enjoyed listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.com. And listen in Tuesdays, 3 p.m. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. This week, I came across a new website from the American Meat Institute and the American Meat Scientists Association. It's called www.meatmythcrushers.com. It purports to be addressing consumer concerns about additives such as sodium nitrates in your, ham and turkey roll and whatever, and animal welfare and food safety. I noticed as I went through the Meat Myth Crushers website, however, that it did not address anything like subtherapeutic antibiotic use in the meat chain. So I'm not sure how many myths they intend to crush. But, you know, as I always say, it's good to know what the opposition is thinking. And if you want to be fair about any issues around the food scene, it's wise to keep up with their press as well as ours. That's it for Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Nicole Taylor is always the first to talk with new and exciting personalities in the food world on her show Hot Grease. Check out a little clip.
Everything is super sweet in the Heritage Radio Network studios today. We're chatting with Fanny Gearson. Fanny is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America and the 2011 James Beard Foundation Cookbook Award nominee. Oh my God, we fry in Bed-Stuy. We have to talk dough. Donuts. I'm gonna have to say, Fanny, I don't know if you know this, I was definitely the first person in Brooklyn to start talking about it. Did you know that?
I knew that last time I saw you, but I didn't know that before.
So we have to talk dough. I mean, it is a bona fide phenomenon in Brooklyn.
I'm so excited to be part of it, and I can't believe it.
You know? I mean, I was just telling you before the show that I think about a month ago I went to dough on a Sunday at 2 o'clock, and all the donuts.
You like what you hear? You can hear Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. live on heritageradionetwork.com. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast or check it out in our archives.